Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com and recorded live from the world's new media capital, St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's face it, we take much of the music heard in movies for granted. With rare exceptions, it's composed and put in place to complement the story and dialogue, not to overwhelm it. Personally, I'm in awe of composers because to my eyes and ears, they speak a foreign language of notes, sharps, and staffs. I think that's what I meant to say, that I will never be able to fathom. My daughter plays piano and guitar and has, on occasion, written her own short pieces for piano, and it never ceases to amaze me. It's a talent she didn't get from me, that's for sure. All of this is my way of saying how much I'm looking forward to engaging today's guest, Bulgarian-born pianist and film composer Mario Gregorov, in conversation. He's the composer behind the music heard in the topical and award-winning film, Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Mario, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. How do you do?
Good. I'm fine. I'm in Sundance for the film festival, so I've skied only one day and been meeting lots of people and having lots of fun. The weather's beautiful here.
And the movie was introduced last year at Sundance, right? So this is kind of a victory lap.
Yes, it is. It was introduced, and the kind of Sundance feels very much that they were very responsible for the movie's success.
And how have you been? I imagine a year ago, maybe some people knew you, some people didn't. How were you welcomed and greeted this year?
Yes, this quite really well. I'm not sure how to gauge the kind of newly found little bit of glamorized success as a form of kind of when people actually respond to you in a way that, you know, now that I'm associated with Precious, I think I usually take that advantage to kind of, you know, go further and maybe dig into either their story or reflect in what I've done, because I'm now the Precious composer, and yet I've done, you know, close to 30 films. I'm very versatile in what I do, and I've had such an incredible career up to now. I've done every aspect of music, from live performance to doing music for advertising and film, and it's interesting.
Are people coming to you this year at Sundance wanting to work with you in the future, or are you being, wined and dined?
Well, not quite like that, but yes, I have had quite a bit of offers, and we had a lovely BMI dinner last night, and there was, you know, full of interesting people and music supervisors, and so I'm making connections for sure, and it is a good place to be at, but I'm looking forward to working some more and growing and becoming, you know, better at what I do, and so it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to let folks know in a couple minutes, and with your permission, I'm going to play Letters, one of your compositions from Precious. But I have to ask you, I mean, how do you do it? I mean, how do you look at a film, imagine what it should sound like, and then translate that to the page and then back, you know, into sound?
I have absolutely no idea. I think that throwing aside all the studies that I've done and all the skills and everything else that I've accomplished as a musician composer is really the first step. And I kind of sometimes I cannot escape at all. So I prefer to be absent-minded when I write, and usually it works for me when I'm very tired, either late at night or sometimes when I kind of manage to, in my brain, diminish the task and say, you know what, it's just a film. Just get it done. Get it over done with. So, and therefore, I don't focus on the intensity of the demand from the director, or whether this movie will make it successful, or it'll open other doors, or any of that thought process, or you know how much I'm getting paid for it. All these things that you kind of are preoccupied in your brain while you write, and you know you think of every possible scenario, thing, I have to make this great. This is a great film, or this is not so good film, and I still have to please the director. Whatever goes to your head. I kind of have to really put it aside, and then for me is the technique. Other than that, I can't really, you know, everything else is very conventional in terms of knowing how to, you know, be self-efficient and you know, to understand production very well, to have a really clear picture of what production means and have the experience that I'm, you know, also classically trained pianist, and I play jazz as well. I've played jazz for years, and I supported acts like Wynton Marsalis and Joshua Redman and Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, and I was on Warner Bros. For 3 years, so I toured nonstop, and that was a huge experience of being put on the spot to improvise, and that really helps me with my composing now, because when I have to do one or two, when I have two films on top of each other, and I'm under pressure, I can really get in touch with that improvisational aspect, and hopefully some of that will turn into a composition. And sometimes it doesn't, and again I have to de-stress and go, you know what, I should stop now and do it at a later point. But that's kind of how I do it.
That's a wonderful answer and explanation, but can I tell you how I think you do it?
Go.
My money's on black magic. Because it's like trying to understand chemistry or physics. It makes no sense, and I just assume it must be supernatural. Because it's an incredible talent, as far as I'm concerned, to be able to do. So I figure it must be like black magic or something.
It is like that, and I can't take really any credit for it. It's what I do with it that's important. I mean, I've always had that talent ever since I was 6 and a half, and my parents threw me into being, you know, a classical a classical pianist, because my mother was a concert pianist and my dad was a concert trumpeter who's kind of quite successful. So there was a lot of pressure for me to be, you know, to kind of live to that expectation. But none of them realized that I really had the talent for composing or improvising, and they didn't even realize it. And actually, they were fighting it. They thinking that I should focus on perfecting the masters. But the masters themselves were rebels. They themselves were doing only one thing, and one thing only, and they were writing what they felt was right, and they were being themselves. So it's a funny world.
Well, with your permission, I'd like to play Letters from Precious. But is there anything you'd like to tell people, maybe who haven't seen the movie yet, about this composition before we play it?
It's a very pivotal point in the movie, and it's kind of really, this is kind of Precious's theme, really. It reflects her goodness and her kind of ability to be strong and make some kind of like sense out of the situation and out of life. And it's a place where she, something magical happens to her. And like most of the cues in the film, it's a very light and very kind of reflectory, or if that's, I don't even know if that's the English word, reflecting kind of a piece of music that is actually it's really her emotional state, and that's what I'm portraying here. And what happens to her in the film is, not to spoil it, but
right.
That's the cue.
All right. Well, folks, listen to this. This is Letters from the movie Precious, and it's composed by Mario Gregorov, and we'll be back with him in just a moment. Thank you. listening to Letters. That's from the film Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire. I'm sure everyone's familiar with it. And the composer of that, Mario Grigorov. I don't know. I'm so worried about saying that wrong. I keep stumbling over it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You correctly.
Thank you. What are you thinking about as you hear that, even now, after this incredible year that the film has had?
I'm kind of dazing off and thinking about that last day where I can't remember. It was the last day of the working. I was in New York, and I think the next day was kind of a holiday. I don't know whether it was Thanksgiving. It was not Christmas for sure. I think it must have been the prior long weekend holiday. Is that Labor? That's Thanksgiving, right? Anyway, mm-hmm. So I'm kind of driving. I finished the sound one, mixing Precious and everything, and with Lee Daniels was there, and then I'm driving home, and I lived in Connecticut at the time. So in the morning, I get to, I have two kids. I'm really happy to be home. I'm making them pancakes in the morning, and I'm completely not going back to New York for like 3-4 days. I'm so excited, and then Natasha, my wife, she goes off to buy milk, and in Connecticut, to get milk, you have to drive 5 minutes to 10 minutes just to get to the store. So she's off in the car, and by the time she comes back with the milk for me to make the pancakes, I kind of make these French crepes for the kids. I'm mm-hmm. in the car with the electric piano in the back, in the car, back to New York, back into Sound One, because Lee gets on the phone completely crazed and just frustrated, and he wants to fix a cue before the film is completely given up and mixed and done. And I'm calling her on the phone saying, I'm really sorry, I'm back to the, can't believe this, but I'm driving back to New York. and not only that, but I end up driving over to 72nd Street on East Side to pick up the violinist, because now I'm thinking I need to fix that. In this cue in the middle, there's this beautiful violin passage, and you know, Lee's kind of flipping out. It's not working, and it's a very, very, very. It's probably the most important. When the violin comes in, it's a part in the film where I don't even think is ever that kind of combination of what happens has never been shot. And Precious is involved in it, but I won't spoil it. But it's a really, really magical moment, and so it's very close to him that moment, and he really wants the music to be just perfect. So I pick him up. I drive back onto the west side on 42nd Street, or I can't remember where the Sound One studio is. Park the car, take my electric piano that has amazing samples and whatnot. You know, it's going to get as close to the real piano that I recorded as possible, just to fix that part. The Sound One people, that's a mixing place, not an engineer, not a kind of a recording place, but it's mixing film. So they're a little rusty on having to record something into the board. So they're all kind of freaking out. And I ended up doing exactly the same piece of music except an octave below with a second violinist, and that just made the difference. So I literally spent the entire day doing that, freaking out, just to play that melody octave below and for fully to approve it. So that's what comes to my mind. So
wow.
And then, of course, you know, the violinist was amazing to come with me and be part of this world deal. But, and then he tells me stories that once that he's been in other recording sessions in New York where the producers and directors on other films have also put, you know, orchestras to the ringer with all that kind of, you know, frustrating stuff of having to redo things all the time. So nothing new. But that's,
wow,
you know, I have to surrender to this as a composer. I can't fight it. That's kind of like one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in doing advertising for years and dealing with very demanding clients. You know, it's a big part of it.
That's a wonderful story, though. I love that your wife went out to get milk, and in the times it took her to go get the milk, you were gone.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Now, this was your third collaboration. For people who don't know, Lee Daniels is the director of Precious, because you also scored Tennessee and Shadow Boxer. What I'm wondering is, did you know in the process of this that this was going to be a different movie, it was going to be received differently, or did you approach it, and did Lee approach it the same as did the previous two movies together?
I was a little more naive to really kind of, now that I've seen the process following the the film last year around the festivals and seeing how it grew and grew, I didn't really think of it in a way that it could get to the Chinese theater in Hollywood with every possible celebrity and opera announcing the film and Lee saying to me, you know, in the middle of it, just to, you know, he got me up and he thanked me in front of everybody. That was kind of a, you know, that was kind of literally a year from the time that we started with this film. So it was a very interesting process, and you know, of course, I was very proud that that happened to me. But and I'm really, you know, happy for him and the movie. But yes, I did know that the film is that the film would do well. I knew it was a magic film. I knew it right at the start, and I think everyone involved knew it. And we kind of got emotionally involved, all of us, from the editor to the clothing designer to you know, to the composer, to everybody that was involved. Kind of touched us, yeah.
Do you know yet, will you work again with Lee? Do you have something?
I hope so, yeah. I think he very much wants to work with me in the future. He's very keen to get stuff going. So, yeah, I think that is it's a great possibility.
Now, last year, in the midst of this film taking off, you released an album of original compositions called Paris to Cuba. Timing must have been pretty good.
In what sense you're saying that it's been good? In the sense that, oh, you mean with the success of the film and then having...
Yeah, to have some product out there, sure.
Correct, yeah. I mean, I have a, you know, me and my partner... Evan Anneman, who's you know, my kind of you know, my soulmate and my kind of support in everything I do, and we started a record label called Warm and Genuine Records, and that was our first release, and it was an album that I kind of worked on for a couple of years, and it was a little idea I had to get back to crossover. And really grow that whole kind of genre in not just in myself as a composer, but also to have something out there that is a crossover in terms of styles of music and the importance of that. I had a very successful hit with an album called Aria, which sold close to 500,000 records, and that was a crossover record between opera and popular music. And it was a little different than what Malcolm McLaren did in the 80s, in the sense that it was an entire album of that concept, but it's a very similar in terms of concept. So it wasn't fully original, but I kind of took that idea and I ran with it and made this album. So now I'm kind of growing that concept, and I think it's something that I think people really, really enjoy, and it's in huge demand because so much music is out there that is so in the genre of you know, rock, gypsy rock, all the way down to classical music and everything in between. And there's word for every single genre. And people are, you know, as much as I think that people have access to music these days because of the internet, I think there's still a huge demand for a really true and a great crossover, you know, people to take what they're learning in life and music and just combine it together and figure out a way to make it work without sounding, you know, tired, desperate, cheesy, or just not kind of working, almost like humorous. So trying to make something that really is fresh and exciting, it's not easy. And that's kind of my challenge. And I think I've achieved that with Paris to Cuba, and this year I'm writing Paris to Rio.
Oh. Oh, that should be interesting.
Yeah.
Do you you have a life outside of your work? You mentioned obviously a great story. You have a wife, you have kids, but when you're doing things away from work, are you hearing music all the time? Are you constantly picking up notes and thinking of, oh, you know, this would sound good? Or I mean, and as part of that, do you when you have these thoughts, are you thinking in terms of notes or you know, how does it come to you, I guess, is what I'm wondering.
Right. Well, first of all, I personally don't ever have a life outside work. And what, how do you define work? For me, it, you know, it would be because music is my work, it's really hard to kind of separate them. And I do, you know, I force myself to have Sunday off. Mm. Sometimes Saturday, depends on if I have to work one day a week, basically. I'm forced myself to have off to really rejuvenate. And then the moment I kind of like make that decision and I empower it by just saying, okay, and I feel so great now, I'm totally free of all the problems and hassles of work and whatnot. And of course, the first thing that lingers in your mind and starts leaking in is music and listening to something and you start thinking about ideas of how you can do this and that and how you can invent that idea or this idea. And how you can, and I do hear sometimes stuff in my head, but rarely. I usually hear stuff that I previously have kind of composed or something like that. But I don't really compose in my head as much as I should, actually.
Hmm.
Because when you compose in your head, you really, you can hear harmony and rhythm, but it's a very abstract concept. Where the melody, because we have one voice and because I think the brain can only focus on one thing at the same time, melody can come extremely free and it can be, it's right there in your face. And but melody usually is just like a harmony but spread out in time. So it's a different way of writing because I'm mostly a harmonic composer, which means that I first write a harmonic pattern and then I would write a melody on top. And I think that for me, it's very important that the harmony comes first because I think there's a lot of magic in that. And then I can actually perfect the melody to be even stronger when I apply the melody on top of the harmony. But that's not like this for everybody. And a lot of composers feel that that is absolutely the wrong way to go about it. The melody should be first. And so it's, everyone is different. And I wish I did have more kind of melodic concept of being able to write in my head. And something different might come out of that.
Well, folks, listen, you can hear more of the music of Mario Gregorov at his website, which is www.mariogregorov.com. It's M-A-R-I-O, and then G-R-I-G-O-R-O-V.com. It's all solid. And you can order the soundtrack from Precious at music stores online and in person, or at MrMedia.com, you can also find the album Paris to Cuba there. Mario, first, congratulations on tremendous success, and it was fascinating to talk to you and get the insight, and particularly love the crepe story.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Good luck. And yes, and please feel free to come back again. I'd love to talk to you about all this again sometime soon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And folks, for more interviews with your favorite musicians, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. And that's where you can listen to my conversations with, well, a little different, but John Denver, the late John Denver, Gene Simmons of Kiss, and many more. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen, and this works, with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. And you can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.